First question for Mayor.
Hi, Manuel Mayor, University of Bern. In a lecture before yours by Professor Ferreira, we saw the plot of the weak Lenzing effect, and the statement was that there has to be, or there should be, a systematic error in the Planck data because it contradicts or is not comparable with general relativity. Are you aware of anything like that, or do you have a different explanation? Could you make a statement about that?
Well, the statement that I would do is that there are very few tensions between Planck and external data, and the leading tension is the one between Planck and weak Lenzing that was mentioned this morning. So since the Planck data are so precise, it is tempting to say, okay, we are going to give good marks and bad marks to the rest of the world, and so this proves that weak Lenzing data are wrong. But this is a very conservative point of view, in a sense. Maybe it's a hint for some unknown physics, or maybe it's a hint for some unknown systematics, either in the Planck data or in the weak Lenzing data. The point is that there is a space-borne mission named Euclid, which should have exquisitely precise weak Lenzing data. So at that stage, if there is still a disagreement between various data sets after Euclid, then we will have a good reason to worry about that. But at the moment, I would say it's too premature. For example, if you look at a completely unrelated subject about CMB, which is non-Gaussianity, okay? For years, people were studying the COBE data and did not find any non-Gaussianity. So they were happy because from the point of view of inflation, you expect not to have any important amount of non-Gaussianity. Then in 1998, there was a paper which made a different analysis claiming to have a 5 sigma or 7 sigma detection of non-Gaussianity. Okay. So there was a lot of hype about that, and then they realized that there was some subtle systematics in the COBE data that were extracted by the non-Gaussianity test that was done at that moment. Okay. So there are many situations where some tensions helped to find some overlooked systematics. So that's the reason people don't get excited too early about tensions, because they know that it proves that some processing may still need to be done.
Okay. Sorry, what would those systematics be?
About the...
What do you think it would be? It could be.
About the weak Lenzing and Planck tension? I have no idea. To be frank, I have no idea of what it could be. What I know is that if you want to have very precise weak Lenzing data, such as with the Euclid spacecraft, it's an extremely complicated problem because you need to have exquisitely precise small scale data about structure formation. Okay. And this makes sure that you need to take into account a lot of astrophysical processes within galaxies, about radiative transfer, about cooling flows, and so on and so forth. So that there are plenty of potential sources of error in your modeling of the small-scale Lenzing, for example, which could make you believe that you have found some deviation from general relativity, where it's just because you did not take into account some subtle but mundane astrophysical effect about the baryon, the physics of baryon in a galaxy. And people who try to reproduce galaxy formation from numerical simulation know that there are plenty of things that they fail to reproduce at small scales. So we don't have enough trust in our numerical simulation before being able to say we are sure that there is a discrepancy between the data and the observation. The modeling in between is crucial and maybe not as accurate as we hope they are already.
There is, of course, a big danger in this argument, I get mails every day from idiots who, in fact, accuse all of scientists of being swindlers, and we're just fabricating our data, and we're making people believe in a Big Bang theory and everything. Yeah. And so on. Now, if you say this, that you find a discrepancy between theory and observations, and you say, well, you don't take it seriously, we can narrow the gap down, you gave these people plenty of food to kill us even more.
Mm-hmm.
So, at some point you must say, well, I'm sure I'm behind this data, I think this is solid, but also when the data happen to agree with theory, you should still say, wait a minute, there could be errors such and such from that and that source. And are we sure that we have confirmed the theory? You should be as critical as in any case, either one way or the other. We have to watch out that, as Professor Zekiki says, we have lots of enemies. And when they discover what you just said now, then they say, ah, we always said this, and so on.
Yeah, so, making the most precise data processing is a difficult task. This is just what I am saying. And the Planck data have been collected by the satellite less than 2 years ago. So there might still be some problems. And actually, we knew that there was some problem in the Planck data because we did not agree with the WMAP data in respect to some things where the precision of the nominal precision of both experiments, should they make, agree. So sometimes you cannot do a fully blind analysis of your data. It's a fact. And that's why I insisted yesterday on the fact that there are plenty of cross check that we can do in order to check that the smallest, the exquisite precision we have with the data is compatible with plenty of cross check where you cross correlate the foregrounds with the CMB and so on and so forth. But still, it does not prove you that everything is okay. Everything you think about seems to be okay, but there might be something you overlooked.
Which is a perfect square for Higgs inflation or Starobinsky inflation.
Yeah. This one or this one?
Yeah, this one.
This one, yes.
It is interesting that you can produce exactly this potential as you wrote from supersymmetry, what is called D-term inflation, and you get there is no extra scalar, there is no there is just one scalar field. And there is a potential which is exactly the potential that you gave. So in supersymmetry, you can exactly reproduce this potential, which my understanding is that also favored by data.
Well, it's favored by data because it has a very low gravitational wave content, so that it is not really constrained in that respect. Actually, what you say, maybe the potential you're talking about is something somewhere here. I don't know.
No, it's the potential you just showed.
Yes, it's exactly... No, the Higgs inflation potential was historically introduced in a completely different context.
I know, but I'm talking about the Starobinsky model. I mean, that is essentially what I'm talking about. The potential which comes from the Starobinsky model is exactly the potential I was talking about, which is actually the potential you showed there.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. The people from this paper have made an extensive review of everything that was proposed in literature. And they did not give any opinion on whether they considered that this or that model was well motivated and so on and so forth. So some model, I know there are some models, the large field inflation, for example, was proposed historically because it allowed you to have some exact analytical solution of the background in flattened field. This was the only reason why this was proposed. And then much later it was shown that this potential, this class of potential, had some justification from the point of view of supergravity or supersymmetry, I don't know. So...
But I was referring to this.
Yes. So I fully agree that the reason why you are proposing something might be less strong than what it happens to be afterwards. Yes. At the moment, the point is that at the moment there are some there is a non-negligible fraction of models which are already excluded by the data. Oh, yeah. And there is a growing number of DAOs that could be excluded if we have better and better constraints about this R parameter, the maximum allowed amplitude of gravitational waves. So we are able to sort better and better among DAOs models, independently of their underlying justification on, and whether or not you like the justification that exists in the literature. Okay. There is in principle hope that you can have extremely strong constraint on this amount of gravitational waves, and there are actually a lot of models that could be there are a lot of models for which the amount of gravitational waves that you expect to have is larger than the lowest bound that you could have from observation. So in the distant future, maybe 30 years from now, you might be able to kill a large class of models. And then, only then, I would say, you might want to discuss, okay, which is the best justified models among those which has survived these increasingly strong constraints from observation. Today, people don't care that much about that because you have models which have almost exactly the same potential and completely unrelated justifications. So saying that I like this model because it has a very good justification, well, it is as equally likely from the point of view of confrontation with data with other models which have nothing to do. So it's a little bit premature, in my opinion. And most of people who play that game have the same attitude in the sense that they don't argue that one model is better motivated than the other. But at some point, this is something that has to be done, I agree.
I think it is a little bit too naive to present the potential in this way. I think you got from this review Encyclopedia Inflationaris.
Yes, yes.
I think that is already an old... I believe that you have, in fact, nowadays, one parameter family of models which are related to what I was talking about, which are called alpha tractors, which were pushed by Linde, Kalosh, myself and others, where you, in fact, can vary one parameter and you can go from Starobinsky inflation to chaotic inflation and you can raise the ratio of tensor to scalar perturbation. So I think that this list is, I would say, incomplete, and not only incomplete, but is just a random way of choosing potentials.
Well, there are so many things in literature that it's hard to present everything in a unified manner. At least they present more than 670 potentials in a unified manner, which is already a good thing, but maybe that it could have been done in another way. The point is that they have developed a series of tools which allows you to compare a large class of models to any existing set of data. And they were the first to do that job. Usually when people compare different models, they choose only a very small subset of all of this, which is less satisfactory than trying to get a more global view. But I understand that it's partly a matter of taste.
Hello?
I apologize, I wasn't following the rules of the school, but I can still give the opportunity to Gulitsky to ask a question.
Yeah. Nikolai Gulitsky, St. Petersburg State University. I would ask you about the frame 19th from your presentation with the anomalous scaling in the gravitational. I don't understand as well how I'm here.
Yeah.
How it was calculated. So I would ask you explain it or give some links to the papers in which this mechanism is described.
Sorry, I did not hear the beginning of the question. I'm sorry.
Okay. My question is about the frame 19th from your presentation.
Frame 19. This one.
Yeah. I don't understand as well the mechanism of the calculation of anomalous scaling in gravitational. So I would ask you to explain it or to give simply a link to some papers in which it is calculated.
Okay, so these papers gives you all the reference for each of the models that you have here. So if you look at this paper and look at this radiative corrected Higgs inflation, you have around 10 references which they based this chapter of their paper in order to give the potential. So the best is that you have a look at this paper and look at the references. As I said, this author just perform a very wide review of the existing literature. They don't say we agree, we don't agree. They talk about what has been published, and they the only correction that they do to the existing literature lies in the technical derivation of the spectrum of cosmological perturbation, which was not done correctly in some of the paper. But the choice of the potential is taken as it was in the existing literature, and they refer you to the historical paper about this or that in order to understand how the potential was built or motivated. So it's better that you first have a look at this and then at the paper which studied this or that specific model of inflation.
Thank you.
I just want to comment that in this long list of inflationary models, in most of them, well, I cannot read, but in any case, I guess that in most of them there are scalar fields which you have to introduce by hand, and you have to have some model in which, for example, supersymmetry or whatever, in which you introduce the scalar field, and then you try to make inflation work out of it. In the case of the Stravinsky inflation, the original one, actually I would say it is the most economical recipe, right? Because,
yes.
I mean, the scalar field that is used in the potential that you have shown is not this one, that's right, is not a new scalar field that you put by hand. It is just a reshuffling of the same degrees of freedom of the gravitational potential, right?
Yes.
Of the R-square theory,
yes.
Right? It is just that you moved from the Jordan frame to the Einstein frame. So you just played with conformal transformations here, and then you just display the same structure in terms of a potential. But in fact, it is the work of gravitation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And moreover, it is perfectly consistent with all the data, right? In contrast to, for example, the possibility that this phi field would be a Higgs field,
mm-hmm.
Which, of course, it would also work, right? It could, you could make it work, but then it is a field that you introduce, and then you have to be sure that this field is the same Higgs field that we have found in the accelerators, right? It's not clear, perhaps. But in the case of the Stravinsky potential, I mean, you get it by free?
Yes.
Right? So it is completely economical recipe.
Yes, it's in the classification of this encyclopedia inflationaries, is the only zero parameter model that they extract from the data, partly for this reason. And that's why that there was a little bit of emphasis on this model, because it is one of the only models where you have the only unknown regarding the prediction about the gravitational waves and the density wave spectral index, the only unknown comes from the reheating temperature, that is the amount of time that elapses between the moment where you produce the fluctuation that you see in the CMB and the moment where inflation ends. So it's the most predictive scenario in a sense. And it has more direct connection with the real world than the rest, so you may find it appealing. Not everybody would agree, I think, but some like it for this reason. Now, the point is that this value of R, which is 10 to the minus 2 is something that in principle you can extract with ambitious next generation observations. So basically the current upper limit that we have for gravitational waves is this, 10 to the minus 1. And what the best that you can achieve on these parameters that is 10 to the minus 4. You cannot go below because basically the gravitational wave signal below this threshold will be drawn into some astrophysical effects that are not very exciting. And people have devised some experiment which, depending on how it works, is going to reach the sensitivity to this parameter of 10 to the minus 3 or 3 times 10 to the minus 4.
Excuse me, what is this parameter on the vertical axis? I cannot read. What is this?
This is the R parameter. This is
R parameter, sorry. Parameter. Yeah, of course. Okay. Yeah.
And so this Higgs inflation in the next decades should be shown to be compatible with very precise data or should be shown to be incompatible. So it's really a testable scenario, which is a nice thing. There are many inflationary models that have been proposed that have such a low amount of gravitational waves that you already know that you will never be able to constrain them beyond some uninteresting bounds. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then I want to thank you for...
No, just a moment. May I ask you to show the slide number, either 19 or 17? Probably it's 19.
19. Slide 19? Yes.
There you write one extra parameter with respect to previous model.
Yeah, previous was a Higgs.
No, leave it. And you quote the inflationary anomalous scaling,
yes,
which means that you violate scaling variance. Is this right or is this wrong? Suppose this is right. In this case, my question is this related to what Professor Ferreira reported about the 5 sigma of scale violation in the data? Where is Ferreira? Ferreira here?
I don't know why it is named that way, so I would not extrapolate on what is implicitly meant about this. Basically, you start from the Higgs inflation and you say, okay, we need to perform some loop corrections to the potential, and we switch from this potential to that one, as a function of a parameter which depends on internal parameters that you cannot predict from first principles.
But since you put anomalous scaling inflationary, my question was, do you break scaling variance or not?
Well, in all the models that have been investigated that way, you always have power spectrum that is very close to the power law. And this is no exception to the rule, because a perfect scale invariance would put you somewhere here, and here you're a little bit further away, but it's not...
Then you break scale invariance.
But we know that scale invariance is broken, because data tell you that this NS is not 1, but 0.90 something.
Yeah, okay. But...
But I don't know why this parameter is called that way, so I...
Okay, it's enough. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, then I'd like to thank the speaker once again for two very nice lectures.